Thank you, Marcia. That was beautiful. Really appreciate it. Good morning, everybody. Welcome to Prairie Unitarian Universalist Society. My name is Peter Anderson. I'm a member of the program committee. Prairie aspires to be both an open-hearted and open-minded congregation. We welcome people of every ethnic and religious background, whatever your color, sexual orientation, gender, or family structure. We welcome you no matter what your age, or your abilities or inabilities. Later in the service, we will invite visitors, guests, and returning friends to introduce yourself, if you like, so that we may get to know you better. On Sunday mornings, we provide a wide variety of services. They are presented either by a Prairie member, a member of a wider community, such as today, or by our minister, Singra Angram. And today, Maggie Felker will be presenting a continuation of the story she started, the story of David, late last year. And now for the chalice lighting. Now the wren has gone to roost and the sky is turning gold. And like the sky, my soul is also turning. Turning from the past at last and all I've left behind. Today we have Maggie Felker to speak. Maggie and I both live on Bittersweet Place in the Crestwood neighborhood. And one of our neighbors, his name is Tom Barry, 2 months ago, at the age of 52, found out he had what was supposed to call was lung cancer and that it had spread to his brain. And Tom is a guy who is completely giving his whole slew of efforts for homeless people and for peace. And Tom is someone who has very few resources of his own. So for someone like that to be struck down like that at 52 is such a tragedy, which always brings out the age-old question of why do bad things happen to good people, to which the Bible puts all this effort to try and explain. And sometimes from amongst us, we see how to best answer that question. Last year, at the end of last year, Maggie and Mike talked about what happened with their death of their son, David, in Ecuador. She'll briefly touch on that again for those who weren't here during her first talk, but today her focus of her talk is about what they're doing to take that bereavement, take that terrible tragedy that happened to them, and make a positive force for good in this world. Please welcome Maggie Felker.
Thank you. My first item on my agenda is to thank you. It's so touching when people care about what happens to other people and to what's happening with our adopted kids in Ecuador. One movie that I heard a lot, and probably in the 80s, was from the movie Gandhi. And there was a moment in that movie when a man came up to Gandhi and said, "My life is shattered. The Muslims have killed my only son. How can I ever, ever rebuild my life?" And Gandhi said, "There's only one way. You have to find a Muslim boy who's lost his parents, and you have to raise that boy as a Muslim. And then you will find peace." And at the time, this was long before my son disappeared. And I thought, whoa, what a bitter pill. How could that work? But Gandhi was right. And that little seed of a story has stayed with me. And it's true. It's true. The good news is it works. Briefly recapping, our son traveled to Ecuador as an exchange student, in 2002, and at the end of his time there, it had been his dream to travel alone, and he had been a world traveler. He had been with Rotary in Hungary, and he'd been with AFS in Ghana, and he really felt that he could do this, and he was 20. And we had no idea the safety problems in traveling, not in such a beautiful but such a mountainous and wild place as some places in Ecuador are. So when he didn't get off the plane in August of 2002, I went there and I joined with the police and searched for him. We found his clothing or his little bag that he traveled with, but we never found him. What I found was a whole new world. At one point I slept in the same bedroom as a 15-year-old maid, and she talked with me about her life. And I talked with the police. I would sit up nights talking with the police in this small town near a large park where we think he disappeared, though we will never know. Because of the circumstances, I stayed. I spent a total of about 6 weeks there at the end of 2002. And in 2003, I had to bring my husband and my daughter back to meet the people who'd been so good to me. So we did. We went back there, and we met the police, we met the guide, we met various people who had opened their homes to me and opened their hearts, and whom I loved and I wanted them to meet. And at that time, we stayed in Quito at this place that I'd been told about by a friend, and called the Centro de Muchacho Trabajador, or the Working Boys Center. And my husband got a calling at that time, and he said, we should go there, and we should volunteer there. And at that time, he didn't speak Spanish, and it's a Jesuit mission, and so you're supposed to have a call from Jesus in order to go there. And he's not a theist. So I said, well, you don't speak Spanish, and do you think you have a call from Jesus? And he was really... I never said anything again. He was so crestfallen, and he so wanted to do this. And I thought, and what he said to me is, I have a call from David. And David's our son. So I thought, well, I guess I'll get on the coattails of this calling and go. So we went in 2004, but I had a small stroke, and we had to come home in November. So I thought, well, that's that. You know, I've tried that, and it didn't work. But my husband kept getting called back. So in the winter of 2005, he went down. I mean, he had kept going back and forth. And in the winter of 2005, he said, well, you know, I'm going to go down this one time, and maybe I can just kind of get closure and finish it. And I said, you know, fine, you know, that's good. But then, right near Christmas time, he called me and he said, something's happened. And I thought, oop, he got another call. And he had had lunch with this student that he'd had in 2004 who'd had to leave the center because she'd become pregnant. And I could just tell, the electricity was over the phone, that he knew that he needed to stay there and support her, and that he could really make a difference for her. And that's our girl, Sophia. This is beautiful Sophia, who was 17 and pregnant in December of 2005. So she's still our girl. She now has three kids at the age of 25, and she's a fighter. So Sophia is really the young woman through whom Mike's second strong call came, and he said, you know, we have to go back. So, you know, we rented our house for the second time, and we went back in 2007, and we stayed 3 years there at the center. It's a place that you can visit, if you want, the Working Boys Center in Quito. It's a center which really has a beautiful, beautiful model of lifting people out of poverty. My husband by this time was fluent in Spanish, and he taught middle school math to the girls there. The Working Boys Center also has sisters, so there's a lot of girls there, and it's a family of families. So we taught adult ed, and moved, we lived there and worked there for 3 years. And as this time in Ecuador, as we spent this time in Ecuador, Mike especially would notice and work with girl students because of the way the boys in middle school at that time had to go out and work during the day, and then they would go to school at night. So during the day, he mainly taught girls. And he noticed how, wow, there were some girls who, if they'd gone to West High, they would be on their way to Harvard. But because they were from where they were, they were choosing either beauty school. The center is a technical school. They were choosing beauty school, professional sewing, or sales, or bakery. Those were their choices. And he just, by working with individuals, he first worked with Gabriela, with Veronica. One by one by one, he identified kids who he could not leave. And he could not stop until they had opportunities. So Gabriela, he taught in 2004, even though we were there for just 3 months. And she came to him with the idea, and her sister. Gabriela has an older sister who's a nurse, and I'm a nurse, and so we had that connection. And her sister said to Mike, we have to find a way for Gabriela to be able to go to college. And so that was the seed, that was sown. Mike asked some of his colleagues. Mike's a retired philosophy professor here. And so they each contributed $200 a year, and Gabriela got started in the university. And from there, we now have 10 students. And so just last summer, we got our nonprofit status, working through Scholl's Nonprofit Law, which is a great group if ever you want to start a nonprofit. And so now we're official, and Mike is coming home tomorrow. He's been in Ecuador since Christmas. We were both there at Christmas time, and this is our family, and these are the children we're raising, and it works. There's so much joy and so much peace. We have a family of family picnic twice a year. We've had 2 big picnics, and in December was our last one. And we had 40 people there, 9 children. So it's such a wealth in our life. And David's there. So I thought we would spend the rest of the time we have. Peter's my timekeeper. Okay. So I have in this little yogurt container the names of 6 of our students whose stories are so compelling. So I thought I would let you guys pick a name, and I'll tell a story, and we'll see how many stories we get to in the time. Sophia. So we've already showed you Sophia's picture. She's an absolutely beautiful and charismatic and smart young woman. But as I began her story, she's the one, she's the one who, through whom the second call came. And so she was, Sophia at the age of 13, she's one of 7 kids. Her family was a farming family outside of Quito. And her mother is a native Quechua speaker, an indigenous woman. And she got very ill. I think she probably had a form of cancer. And they had to sell all their cows, all their land, and move to Quito in order for her to get treatment, in order to pay for treatment. And she did recover, but the expenses pretty much wiped the family out. And so Sophia lived with, I think, three or four of her brothers and sisters and her dad on the streets of Quito. They kind of settled under some stairs. Somebody gave them a cooking grill. And they, many people, if you ever go to Quito, many people are begging on the streets and begging in the buses or selling little candies or selling bubbles with a Barney figure on it. they're selling, or ice cream, or whatever they can sell, they'll sell. There's a popsicle franchise, and people sell popsicles for 4 cents, profit of 4 cents. So you can imagine how many popsicles you have to sell to get any money. But that's what grown-ups do there. They sell. So the kids sold, everybody sold, and they tried to keep themselves together until they found the Working Boys Center, where we worked, which is a fantastic group, almost 50 years under the same Jesuit priest and Blessed Virgin Mary's sister. So it's quite the group. But they provide 3 meals a day, and they provide free, and I do mean free, education. The public schools are certainly, I mean, the public schools are the public schools, and they don't charge tuition, but, you know, you have to get a uniform, and you have to get books, and you have to get pencils. And so really poor families can't afford to send their kids to public schools. So this school is, like, absolutely free, and you get free meals. And it's based on personal formation, too. So the parents have to, and they have to take showers every day, and which is a big, you know, a big revelation to some people. So anyway, they joined the centro, and Sophia had lost a lot of time out of school. So she was like 13 or 14 and in seventh grade when Mike first met her in 2004 when he was there for a short time. But then when we kind of reconnected with her, a 17-year-old who finds herself pregnant, you know, there's a guy behind that, and people who are in the poverty that is in Ecuador and in Quito, he's a very, very troubled man. We met him, and she tried to be with him. And so she had little Marjorie in 2006, and you know, and she tried to keep her family intact, and she had a civil marriage with Rodrigo, and you know, and then they had little Allison in 2008, but one day. Marjorie, who was by then probably 4 years old, came and told her grandmother, Blanca, my daddy hit my mommy, and her nose bled. And it turns out that there was abuse going on. There was physical abuse, and there was also emotional abuse. Rodrigo would tell Sophia, you'll never amount to anything. And whatever support you get from Maggie and Mike, they won't stay with you. There's no reason even for you to study anymore. You'll never amount to anything. So there were all these really negative messages and physical abuse, and she did separate from him. And at that point, we could see that we just love Sophia by this point. And we really wanted her to be able to someday offer a really good quality of life for her kids. So we committed to having her go back to school, and she had to go back to high school. She had to start over at the age of 22 to find, and there's plenty of, you know, adult high schools in Quito because there's plenty of people who need them. So it was a big step for her at the age of 22 to go back to high school, but she did because she really, really wants, at that time she really wanted to be a professional beautician. She really wanted to do that. And she's got the personality that she could be anything because she's so acogedora, they call it in Spanish, that really takes people in. But in order to go to the very best school, she had to finish high school, and that would take 3 years. So she committed herself to doing that. And lo and behold, a year ago, about 18 months ago, I was on the phone with her, and Mike was in Quito because he spends half his time there. And she said, "Ay, Margarita, you know, I have something to tell you. I haven't even told Mike." And I said, "Okay, you know, what is it?" And lo and behold, she was pregnant again. By the same, one could say, a ne'er-do-well person. He's not supported the kids, and he continues to discourage her advancement in any way. He has a whole other story, so I don't mean to be judging him, because people have such incredibly hard situations to cope with that it's hard for them to make that change, and I get that, but wow, you know, we thought, whoa, three kids, and she thought, whoa, three kids. But a year ago in April, on April 13th, Jonathan David was born. And so we have a little David now. And of course we love him. And she's been so brave. You know, she gave birth, and I think 2 days later she was expected to be back in class and to do a full-time practicum. So her mom, the baby's grandma, you know, took in one more grandchild, and they live with the grandparents. She has a room for herself and her three kids in this pretty good house that her parents managed to rent, which has place for some crops out front. And her mother is, the grandma or the mom, Blanca, is happy as long as she can plant a few things. She's really, really a farmer, a crop raiser at heart. So by this time, her kids are like, Mike and I are the godparents of her oldest child, Marjorie, and Rachel, our daughter, is the godmother of her second child, and a good friend who's also a volunteer at the center is the godfather of her third child. So this is like, you know, they're really so special to us. And we support her at a rate of $400 a month because we send her kids to private school because we just want to do that. There's a little school that called Jesus Mi Amigo, Jesus My Friend. And they're evangelicals, and it means the world to us and to her to know that her kids are nurtured the way we want them to be nurtured. So we want her to be able to be the mother she can be. She's a fantastic mother. And now is thinking about, she's actually gonna graduate high school in this summer, which is such a triumph. If you can imagine being in high school at age 22 to 25 and giving birth to a child and raising the two other children and being a good mother. She is such a creative and loving mother to these kids. And one thing we've done is we've bought those kids books from the time Marjorie the oldest, and when she was months old, we started buying books, and they love books and they love puzzles. And they really are confident little girls and loving little girls. And that little boy, they call him David. A lot of times kids are often called by their second names in Ecuador, I think more often than here. So he's one of our little Davids. Our daughter actually gave us a second little David. our daughter had a baby last summer, and he's Julian David. So there's many ways that our son is woven into our lives. So that is Sophia's story. She's going to graduate, and she's thinking, she's weighing. We are going to support her for 2 or 3 more years. We want to have her established. And so she's, we're committed, you know. one of the things that's important for all our girls, and that Sophia really helps us to illustrate, is that here in Madison, they call them wraparound services, social service agencies, if they try to help someone, realizing more and more that you can't just say, okay, here's money for your scholarship, or here's this. You got to pay attention to the whole family, and to all their needs, because anything, if you're a person in poverty, anything can throw you off course. If you have an illness, if your child has an illness, if you have a dental problem, if you have a vision problem, if anybody in your family has any of these problems, you might have to quit your schooling and work. So we try to be attentive, giving everybody a supply of ibuprofen, which is too expensive there. So if anybody has aches or pains, children's Tylenol, thermometers, whatever it takes, we, through David's Educational Opportunity Fund, are committed, whatever it takes, and whatever family thing occurs, we're going to address it so they can become graduates. So she's weighing between beauty, you know, getting a professional beauty license, and maybe doing childcare, getting a childcare license, because she is such a good mother. And through our messages, she actually knows that. So that's Sophia's story. Gabriela. this is our Gabriela. And again, her story has been alluded to. She is blessed with a really, really good family. Two things about Gabriela, who is going to graduate as an environmental engineer this summer. Yay for Gabriela. Her parents are wonderful. Her dad's, we have kept in touch with them because they own, or they rent space, and they owned a little restaurant for a while. And we would go there like every Saturday morning and eat with them because it was in walking distance of the center. And one of the stories about Gabriela's mother, which I think shows what a leap it is for this girl to be graduating in environmental engineering, her mother's a wonderful woman, wonderful cook. And she had us over. She knows that one of the things I like about Ecuador is the dish called fritada, which is pork dish prepared with certain spices. So she wanted to have us over for fritada one day, and we come, and it's, you know, there, and it looks really good. She said, yeah. She said, yesterday, I wished so much that there was a man around because I had to kill the pig. But there wasn't a man around. They were all gone. So I got some neighbor ladies, and we killed the pig. And well, you know, I mean, if you think of, like, even catching a pig, like, I don't know how to do that. And then when you think of all the steps of, like, getting from a pig to fritada, but she said, we did it. And I thought, oh, man. So that's the kind of skills and perseverance and strength that she inherits from her mother. And the others, well, there's many, many sweet things, memories of Gabriela I have. But the other thing, one time, during the time we were down there, they wanted to celebrate my birthday. And so I came to the restaurant, and the only decorations were 2 blue balloons. And Gabriella said, "We have these two blue balloons because they reminded us of your blue eyes." And blue eyes are pretty unusual in Ecuador. So, and everybody would a lot of times comment on my blue eyes, but they decorated with two blue balloons. So they're a family that really knows how to give as well as how to graciously accept what we have, you know, supported Gabriella. And she's a very, very bright woman. One of the first times I met her too, Mike, she was a student of Mike's in 2004, and then she came back. She wanted to be tutored by him when she found out that he was back in 2007. She came every Tuesday and Thursday at like 7:30 in the morning so she could work with her math with Mike, because she loves math and she's very talented in it. And the first time I spent any time with her and Mike and she were talking about math, I thought, wow, when she talks about math, it's like some other girl, some other teenage girl might talk about their boyfriend. She loves math and she loves talking about math. So I thought, wow, she really is something. And I also went to the jungle with her sister, who was sent way out after graduating nursing school. Her sister and everybody who graduates in nursing or medical school or dental school, there's a 1 year of service expected of them. And I went with her sister just for a few days to an outpost and tramped through the jungle on a vaccination campaign with Nelly. So now Gabriella's graduating, and she's really interested in wastewater management. And there is no wastewater management in Ecuador except in two cities. So Quito's this huge, I mean, it's millions and millions of people, no wastewater treatment. So, and it all goes into the rivers. And it's like, ooh, really? But yeah, I mean, if you think of how expensive the technology for wastewater treatment is, and the limitations on budgets. So I'm really excited about having a graduate in wastewater treatment. And she's becoming more and more interested and is going to write her thesis, I believe, on that. So, whoa, you know. Well, the birth control question is really an interesting one in Ecuador. It's really not so much, people say, oh, you know, the Catholic Church, but really Ecuadorian society in general is a society with a lot of rules, but nobody follows them. So it's not like they're going to say, oh, the Catholic Church says this, we won't use birth control. But it's a very, very, there's a lot of machismo, And the indigenous, not to like blame the indigenous over the Catholic Church, because I'm, you know, it's complicated, but there's also an indigenous strand of culture which really does expect the woman to be available to the man. There is that machismo that is part of the culture, and I think most indigenous women and non-indigenous Ecuadorians would say yes. You know, there's a machismo culture here. I certainly have some stories about that. Birth control, people have a lot of mixed feelings about birth control, even like women themselves who've had six children. It seems like there's a tendency to wait until you've had one more than you can possibly handle, and then go with a tubal ligation as far as rather than really planning. But it's a very complicated issue, and there's no one factor. But our kids are not, you know, when we take new young people, Gabriella herself will say, she's a leader now, but you can't expect to be a father or a mother and a student. So that's an expectation. Veronica is our other, where's Veronica over here? Veronica's another woman who surprised us with a pregnancy. And but fortunately, she was in early childhood education and she didn't miss a beat. You know, she could integrate her experiences of being a mother And she continued her education and is graduating in early childhood education in July. Veronica is graduating at a very propitious time in early childhood education because the laws of Ecuador are changing to require that preschools have professionally trained staff rather than just like, you know, whoever applies for the job. And they've been very very lax, I think, in that regard, but now they're starting to require that people have credentials. And so she's graduating with the right credentials at the time they're being required. And you know, and so we think that she will really be very employable. We have that expectation. There's also a lot of environmental awareness in Ecuador. Ecuador is a gorgeous, gorgeous country with no wastewater treatment, you know. And there's a growing awareness that they have just incredible resources. And so we're hoping, we'll see, you know. But she's graduating, and someone has already talked with her through her church, actually, about being involved in a project for wastewater treatment. So we're hopeful. Yeah, it's a really complex issue, and we're learning about it. We're, you could say, 4 years or 5 years into this. There's a great variety of higher education opportunities available. I would say no college in Ecuador provides the quality of colleges here. We're just now beginning to deal with the public standard university. It's called the Universidad Central, or Central University, in Quito. It's incredibly inexpensive. It's like $35 a semester. But it's terribly run. Our girl Jenny, here's Jenny, she was born to be a veterinarian. And she's just totally loves animals and adopts street animals, of which there are a lot in Quito. So she finally got through all the rigmarole that she needed to do to be accepted, and she failed two of her courses because like 90% of the kids in the anatomy course failed it. Because that's, and it's very typical to have large number of people fail because the requirements are just crazy. She was graded on these tests where she had to run around to 10 different stations in 10 minutes and identify muscles that were hardly even indicated. So, and really it was, and only 5% of kids who start veterinary school graduate. So it's horrible. They don't really seem to care whether you succeed or not. It's a very brutal system in the Central. The two of our girls, Gabriela and Veronica, have gone through the Salesian University. It's run by a group of Italian, or they're not all Italian, but the Order of Salesians is a Catholic group originating in Italy. And they're compassionate. The courses aren't, I would say, of the quality that you get in a university here or a college here, but you know, they've not been horribly treated. They've been pretty well treated, and they go in a sequence of courses that's going to result in their graduation. You know, so still there's a high dropout rate. I think Gabriela's beginning course had about 45, and it's down to 12. But people drop out for a variety of reasons: pregnancies, family situations. They just can't afford the tuition anymore, or they fail the courses. So it's really, you know, it's not like, you know, it's of course you couldn't support 10 people going to college here unless you were you know, really, really the Miller family of Milwaukee or something. So we, with the help of you know, people who contribute, we can support 10 students at various levels. But you could never do that, you know, supporting people in American college. So tuition now is up to about $1,000 in the Salesian University, $1,000 a semester. It had been hovering around 700, but it's going up. So, you know, it's that's doable, and we've had good luck with the Salesians. And we have a boy now, Richard, who's now going to the school that was only open, actually, for children of the military up until recently. So he's going to a very prestigious school, and it's very low cost, but again, it's crazy run, you know, so.
Thank you so much, Maggie.
People just know that they're...
For closing words, and in the end, the love you take is equal to the love you make. Paul McCartney.